Robin.
Hi. I love how we always begin these episodes like we just stumbled on one another in the office.
Yes,
like
in our large cavernous office space.
I definitely feel like we should always be carrying around a recorder all the time.
You and I just had an impromptu conversation this morning about the evolution and future of the Jewish movement before you even put your bag down.
Yeah, I like walked in, good morning, let's talk about this philosophical question. But where's the, we didn't record it.
And we now, didn't.
All right.
Well, maybe for another time.
Yeah, maybe that question will come up. Okay. There's so many conversations and questions. More than...
Don't say it.
I have to say it. There's more than four.
Okay. I guess we have to get into each episode of these ones.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
All right. Let's get to it. I am Ilana Ravel, Jewish Learning Venture CEO.
And I'm JLV's graphic designer, director of JKID Pride and PJRA Engagement, Robin Matthews.
And we are the hosts of More Than Four, a blogcast that answers some of the questions people have about Judaism.
Just some.
All right. What's today's question?
Okay. So today we're answering the question, what's the point of that little beanie? You know that question that we get all the time, right? I guess more explicitly, it's what are the different things that Jews wear and what do they mean? So I guess the beanie we're talking about, kippah, right?
Yeah. Okay. And I'm sure that there's a much more eloquent way to phrase that question.
Probably, but maybe we'll leave that to our guest today, who's arguably one of the most eloquent people in our office.
True fact.
So today we're joined by our friend and colleague, Char Hirsch, and Char brings more than 6 years of experience working with informal Jewish education, with a focus on connecting with Jewish history and engaging in cross-cultural learning. Previously, they were a museum educator at the Weizmann National Museum of American Jewish History in Philadelphia and the Museum of Jewish Heritage in New York City.
But not at the same time.
No, that would be a long commute. Really tough. They hold an MA in Public History and a BA in Religion from Temple University.
Thanks for being with us today and for helping us answer this kind of nebulous question.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's just sort of start and get a general, like, is this something from the total? Like the idea of special garments for Jews? Like, where does this sort of come from?
Yeah, and there are so many different things that Jews can wear to express their Jewishness, their Jewish identity, and these things differ from your level of observance and your community and where you live in the world, and so little of it actually comes from the Torah.
Right.
The Torah talks about some things related to clothing, like what types of materials your clothing should be made out of, how much of your body or clothing should cover, but most of the individual things that we wear comes out of the commentaries on the Torah, from the Talmud, from other centuries of writings.
So can you give us an example?
So what is with the beanie?
Yeah.
I mean, get cut right to the chase.
Yeah. So the kippah, also called the yarmulke, that's the Yiddish term, kippah is Hebrew, it is initially presented as a way to indicate a fear of God or an awareness of God as a symbol of piety.
I have questions. The questions are, why do only men wear them? Why do some people wear them like all the time? And some people only wear them in a synagogue? Why sometimes do women wear them? Why sometimes do women wear things that look like doilies? And are those my only questions? And there are different looking ones. Like there's big old yarmulkes and teeny little ones. And they don't seem to have any, like you can buy them that have like Red Sox logos on them. Like they don't seem to have any like rules really about.
And there are definitely some rules or maybe some cultural connotations is maybe a little bit more accurate. And the answer to all those questions really is it depends on the community.
Sure. I guess the first question is, why do only men wear them traditionally?
This gets back to some more traditional interpretations of halakha, of Jewish law, and the view that many of them only apply to men, which is not necessarily something that everybody believes these days. Mm-hmm. There are definitely some communities where only men wear kippot. Women might wear something else, or they might not wear anything on their heads at all. But there are also communities where women wear kippot, where people of all genders beyond mm-hmm. men wear kippot.
So the idea is the Jewish law is wear the kippot, but laws then only apply to men, mm-hmm. sort of traditionally
yeah.
speaking.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think it's explicitly said, just one of those things that's sort of understood.
So some people wear them all the time, and some people only put them on when they go into the sanctuary.
People might only cover their heads in the synagogue because maybe it's what they were raised to do, maybe it's what their community does, maybe they want to make a distinction between being in a prayer space, a prayer time, and the rest of their lives. Whereas for people who do cover their heads all the time, for many of them, it is about having that awareness mm-hmm. all day.
So I have a teenage son, and when he's in our synagogue, I mean, he will wear a yarmulke when he's, you know, on the bima or whatever. But our cantor has said, like, well, you have a baseball hat on, that's fine. Like, any head covering seems to go. Is that you? It's just cover your head with whatever you want? Is that the idea?
Yeah. And at the other end of the spectrum, though, is the choice that one has to make sometimes if they're living in an area where it is not safe to be openly Jewish, mm-hmm. if you are in an area where you might encounter anti-Semitism or other discomforts, wearing a baseball cap instead of a kippah might be a way to still honor your Jewish identity, mm-hmm. have this reminder, but in a way that is safe.
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So what else? We can talk about payas.
Mm-hmm. And facial hair.
And facial
that's
hair.
Connected.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So payas are the like long, well, they don't have to be the long curly. They have different styles mm-hmm. too.
Yeah, so many different styles. This does actually come from the Torah. The mitzvah is to not round off the hair at the edges of your heads. Is the translation of okay. that particular mitzvah. And so there are so many different ways to interpret that. Like, what is the edge of your head? Mm-hmm. What does it mean to round off your hair? All of that. And so different communities have interpreted this in different ways.
Is there a reason for it, though?
So when you're looking at mitzvot in the Torah, there are generally two different categories of them. One category is a commandment that has an easily guessed reason behind it. And then there's another category that are mitzvot that don't necessarily have a clear reason behind them. And this could be defined as something that cannot be intuited or something where the reason behind it is known only to Hashem, as opposed to
Hashem,
people.
God.
Yeah,
God.
Yes. Uh-huh. And so this falls under that category of we have this mitzvah. We don't necessarily have an obvious reason for it, mm-hmm. but it is a mitzvah in
All
the
right.
Torah.
It also could be related, you know, many of the mitzvot that don't have that reasoning behind them often serves as a way to separate us, right? It's sort of in response to what else might have been happening in the community. And
right.
so it's possible that other folks were buzzing their hair, right? And this was a way to say, actually, we want to be a little mm-hmm. different. So it could be mm-hmm. that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was reading that this was a common practice at the time for religious leaders in pagan communities is to shave the sides of their heads as a way to indicate their own piety.
Right.
And so this was a way to separate from idol worshippers.
Sure. Yeah. That makes sense.
Today it can be a way to separate ourselves from Gentiles and also to affirm our own Jewish identity. For a lot of people, it can be really empowering to go about the world and be visibly Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And this is especially true for people who might not conform to one's ideas of what a Jewish person looks like. You know, we have a lot of stereotypes around what Jews look like.
Because some people have no choice but to go around the world right. looking Jewish. Right.
Right. Right. But that's not,
but that's not everybody.
That's not true for everybody.
Right.
And the people for whom that doesn't apply, they face a lot of discrimination in Jewish communities,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's being questioned about whether they belong there, whether mm-hmm. it is racism, other forms of ostracization. And so wearing these Jewish symbols, whether it's a kippah, whether it is peyot, whether it's a tlit katan, the tzitzit, it can be a way to show, hey, look, I am also Jewish. Mm-hmm. I belong here as much as you do. And so this has been a very powerful way of reclaiming and putting one's stake in Jewish tradition for Jews of color and for people who've converted to Judaism.
You know, there's a number of social media sites that help to sort of promote that. So on Instagram, there's, I think it's Own Your Jewish Star or Own, I think it's Own Your Jewish Star. And people post photos of them with earrings or necklaces or, you know, whatever it might be that helps to identify them. And you really do see such a range of people who are choosing to promote themselves or on Hey Alma, right, is another Instagram site that, Is that what you say about Instagram?
Instagram account.
Right.
Wow, where, we are old people.
We don't have to do And I was having a really interesting conversation with a friend who was telling me about how these garments and accessories was a part of their own conversion journey, where as they progressed in their conversion, they started wearing, you know, some more jewelry, earrings, necklaces, and then once their conversion was finalized, they got a tattoo to celebrate it. A tattoo actually that says "Hineni," here I am, which is a phrase in the Torah that has a lot of significance.
Yeah.
So if we're talking about Torah as the guide to garments and look, can you talk a little bit about the tallit? About the prayer shawl? Because certainly there's reference, right, to the tzitzit, to the fringes of a tallit. It seems like that's covered pretty well in there.
And this, again, right, this is, again, is something sometimes people do in synagogue, but sometimes exclusively, and sometimes people do all the time. You might see sort of like the threads hanging out from underneath clothing.
There is what's called just the tallit, which is what you'll often see in synagogues, the long shawl that people wear over their shoulders, around their neck, with the tzitzit, with the fringes hanging down. Then there's also tallit katan, the small tallit, which is, you know, if you're out and about and you see people with fringes hanging out of their shirt, they're most likely wearing a tallit katan underneath their shirt. If you're looking at what is in the Torah, the tallit is actually not in the Torah. It is the tzitzit that are in the Torah.
Just the fringes.
And they are meant to be a reminder of the mitzvot, of the commandments.
And so again, it's just your, how you choose to observe, like whether you wear it all the time or just when you're praying or
And you'll see in different communities, for some the practice is to leave them hanging out, for some the practice is to tuck them into their pants, so it's more of a private practice. For some you wear a tallit only in the synagogue.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And not just walking around the synagogue, but during certain prayer services, right? So you would traditionally wear a tallit in the morning service,
right?
But not in the afternoon or evening service.
Right. Why wouldn't you wear it normally on an evening service? Do you know?
I actually don't.
No. Do you know? We can look it up. We'll put it in the show notes.
We will try to find out. That is a good question.
So what are some of the other things you had on your list? You mentioned so many different ways to identify.
One thing that I do want to mention, though, about tallit katan is that this is another practice that historically has been relevant mostly to men. But in recent years, there's been a lot of really fantastic efforts to open this practice up to women, to people of different genders, to people of different body types, because this is about clothing. This is about shirts. Historically, there's been a bit of a limit as to the different types and sizes of those shirts, and which can be really restrictive to people who might want to engage in this practice.
Like they just weren't made in bigger sizes,
just not made in bigger sizes, or not made in ways that fit easily along with clothing that is typically designed for women. And so there have been a lot of different organizations recently creating both that sort of undershirt for a much wider range of body types, and also attached to different types of clothing. Hmm. I saw one shop that was selling basically crop top versions of a Talit Katan, which was super cool to see.
And that's interesting because that's another thing that we talk about, right, is how much skin you can show. Why is that a thing?
Mm-hmm. A lot of people see these types of practices and think that it's about shame about the body, but it's actually the exact opposite. It's about privacy, and it's about respect towards one's body.
It becomes more special, right? Think about it. If you keep covered and then you're choosing only your spouse to be the one to see whatever parts of your body, then it's more special for that person,
mm-hmm.
right? So I believe you also, we want to talk about some of the like jewelry, tattoos, right? Like some of these
adornments.
Things. Adornments, that's a good way. I like that. Let's talk about the adornments. What can you share with us?
You know, it's extremely common to see someone wearing like a necklace with a magenta bead with a Star of David on it.
There are sites, like we know that Rebecca at the Well mm-hmm. had a nose ring and mm-hmm. bracelets, or she was given bracelets by Eliezer, mm-hmm. right, on the servant. And I think there might be one or two other women that are identified as having jewelry in the Torah. Mm-hmm. That's not saying whether we should or shouldn't or be allowed or not allowed. But I know that that's been an argument for people to get a nose ring. Well, Rebecca had mm-hmm. it. I should be able to have it too. Mm-hmm.
Because what I grew up believing, it didn't apply to me. It wasn't applied to me. But what I grew up believing was that you were not supposed to like do anything to your body. You were not supposed to like pierce it or tattoo it or mark it or anything. And I think this came up in our conversation about what happens after you die. Mm-hmm. And it was related to that, so that your body is whole or something.
That's right. If these are the bodies we're given, who is it?
Right.
You know, who is it for us to make changes to our body that we were given?
Uh-huh.
I think that that was where it perhaps had started.
Yeah. That's definitely a large reason why people are against things like tattoos and piercings and such. One other place that in the Torah that people draw from for this prohibition is a line in Leviticus that says, "You shall not make gashes in your flesh for the dead or incise any marks on yourselves," which mm-hmm. people typically interpret as being about tattoos. The more nuanced interpretations of this line over time have narrowed that prohibition to specific types of tattoos. Mm. So there are some who see this as prohibiting specifically tattoos that include God's name or that include references to pagan deities. There are some that interpret this as specifically banning memorial tattoos. Mm. There are some that base this prohibition of tattoos on the permanency of it. And there are some that interpret this as a ban specifically on voluntary tattoos, mm-hmm. right? Because this ban gets a little bit more complicated if you think about things like Holocaust survivors, mm-hmm. And also certain people that have certain types of medical tattoos, where it is part of
like radiation treatment, they might
right, exactly
mark a spot.
Mm-hmm. Where having a tattoo is part of your preservation of life, which can override pretty much any mitzvah.
Yeah, my mother hates that I have a tattoo. I really think it's just that, like, Jews don't do that. Like, she has sort of that feeling about it.
Yeah, I think what we're probably seeing, as we do with many things with sort of new generations, right, is sort of a reclaiming of that. So in our generation, right, I'm in my 50s, right, we grew up being told you don't have tattoos because you can't be buried in a Jewish cemetery. Things have shifted, right, as Char just said, and that, you know, our kids and some of us, right, myself included, mm-hmm. right, have decided to sort of reclaim that. You know, there are people who choose that as a way of self-expression in the same way that Jews have always used clothing and adornment as a method of self-expression.
So I love this idea of reclaiming these traditions, mm-hmm. which pretty much anything that we're talking about in this episode, there are people who are reclaiming it in different ways. Mm-hmm. You know, we spoke already about people of different genders besides men who are wearing tzitzit, who are wearing kippot, all of that. You know, for so many of these people, and myself included, honestly, it is about reclaiming these traditions and finding personal meaning in them.
Mm-hmm. See, I told you they were among the most eloquent here.
True fact.
Yeah.
Also a true fact is that our listeners can send in their questions to be answered eloquently on a future episode. Want to tell us how?
I absolutely will. They can send us an email at morethanfour, that's the number four, at jewishlearningventure.org. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/jlearnventure or reply in a comment wherever this podcast was linked, whether it was Instagram or Facebook or wherever you found it. So until next episode.
See ya.
Bye.